Welcome to Jack Swan's Time Travel Adventures. For readers who are not familiar with the Jack Swan Adventures series, Welsh science professor Dylan Jones had a research laboratory in an old roundhouse on the water meadows of Salisbury, Wiltshire, England. Jones had a theory that magnets have the ability to hold memory. This is true of some magnetic rocks that hold the memory of magnetic north at the time of the rock's formation. Dylan Jones further believed that strong magnets, such as neodymium, can hold large amounts of simple gravitational memory. The trick, he said, was decoding the information stored, just the same way that a USB or thumb drive memory stick needs a special application to unlock the data stored within the memory stick. To be honest, he made a pig's ear of his first attempts at decoding the secrets of neodymium. He sent himself off on an indefinite time travel adventure. However, his equipment in his laboratory was still running, and a huge energy vortex continued swirling around. Needless to say, he left the front door wide open. It truly was a dark and stormy night, and two swans, desirous of finding a warm, dry place to cuddle up in, walked into the quantum energy vortex. A wonderful transformation took place. Their body size increased slightly. Their eyes changed color to a deep and quite beautiful blue. Finally, and this was the strangest part, through some weird infusion of kinetic or electromagnetic or whatever force, they developed the ability to speak almost perfect English. Dylan Jones' good friend, Henry Moggs, discovered the two swans next day and named them Jack and Eliza. Jack, it turns out, was severely accident-prone. The first book detailed how he destroyed Stonehenge, completely burned down a beautiful Elizabethan manor house, almost drove a Chinese restaurant into bankruptcy, and then there was the explosion. The aftermath of the explosion meant the small village of Dimley was no longer found on any Ordnance Survey map of Wiltshire. In Jack's defence, however, it should be pointed out these incidents were unintentional and purely accidental. Our first chapter opens with an invitation for Professor Dylan Jones and his daughter Emma as guests of the Italian government. Accompanied by their good friend Mr. Henry Moggs, they worked on the historical restoration of the Tower of Pisa. Clearly, aerial surveys were necessary, so Jack Swan, although slightly overweight, had all the necessary flying abilities, and he became part of the restoration team. So we begin with Chapter 1, entitled Unintended Consequences. In 2013, Italy was undergoing yet another change of government, and its economy was as flat as a three-day-old pizza. The new prime minister decided the country needed a symbolic boost to shake it out of its apathy. He looked for a way to show his European partners that his country was on the mend. Then a brainwave hit him. What a better way to show Europe and indeed the world that Italy was straightening up its act than to have the famous Tower of Pisa mechanically straightened up, in fact, restored to an upright position. This was no mean feat, as many attempts with concrete and huge lead weights had failed or worked only partially. As a former executive in a Milan car factory, he called on his old workmates to build the world's biggest forklift truck. The name of this gargantuan hydraulic crane and lifting assembly honored the two possible builders or architects of the tower, Dio Ti Salvi and Bonanno Pisano, the sculptor. The Prime Minister explained, as these two inept tradesmen caused the tower to tilt, so they should have the dubious honor of bringing it back to the vertical. Henry Moggs' experience with the leaning spire of Salisbury Cathedral made him a prime candidate for chief advisor on the project. Professor Dylan Jones learned the original foundation stones might contain a large amount of neodymium, so he asked to be part of the advisory team. Definitely aerial surveys were called for. Deemed absolutely necessary, the skills of one Jack Swan, experienced time traveler, adventurer, and tall building Plum Bob Holder. It was a warm March day when the group arrived. Emma Jones had time off from school to work as recorder and assistant to Mr. Henry Boggs. They all checked into the nearby hotel Doña Berta Bernardo, that enjoyed a clear view of the Piazza del Duomo, where the famous tower stood. Later that week, with much fanfare, Dio Te Salvi Buonanno, the world's biggest forklift truck, arrived in Pisa. Television crews from around the world arrived in great numbers as the huge mechanical device moved against the tower. The news media diligently recorded each agonizing moment. The idea was simple. First, the two forks would extend through the foundations of the tower. Second, they would raise the tower just a teeny-weeny bit. Third, gradually the giant hydraulic arm would tilt the tower into the upright position. Immediately, a team would pour new and improper foundations. With the tower upright and now on solid ground, they would safely remove Dio Te Salvi Buonanno, the world's biggest forklift truck. What could go wrong? You're perfectly correct. With Jack Swan involved, something had to go amiss, and it did. Professor Jones took Jack with him into the basement of the tower and, using his special magnetometer, found what he described as an enormous lump of neodymium inside one of the old foundation stones.
"Why on earth would they have such a large amount of neodymium end up inside this stone?" asked Jack.
Professor Jones scratched his head in wonder. "I can only believe they were unaware of what the rock contained. I mean, nobody put it in the rock. It was in the rock to begin with."
"Professor, do you believe that's why the tower started to lean? I mean, this neo stuff is super magnetic. Perhaps it was pulling everything down into the earth."
"No, Jack, I think the tower tilted because plain old bad foundations. I will ask if they can remove this rock and replace it with reinforced concrete. That way we kill two birds... we get two things done at the same time." As the technicians assembled at Dio Te Salvi Buonanno Pisano, Jack flew several times around the tower with a laser strapped to his chest. A special computer received the signal and slowly created a three-dimensional image of the tower. The technicians then could calculate exactly how much pressure the machine had to use. As a warm and beautiful Tuscan sun set over the Piazza del Duomo, the four relaxed in the lounge of the Doña Berta Bernardo Hotel. It was here that Jack caught the eye of local television reporter Francesca Bobolini. She spoke perfect English as she interviewed Jack for Italian national television.
"Bellissimo, Jack. How come you are the only swan in the world that can speak?"
She blushed slightly as she added,
"And may I say, the only swan in the world with two very beautiful blue eyes."
"Whoa, Francesca, I'd look pretty funny with just one eye, wouldn't I?"
Emma Jones giggled loudly, and a technician motioned her to be quiet.
"Bellissimo, Jack. How would you like me to show you the sights of our fair city of Pisa? It would be an honour to be your tour guide."
"Oh, think that'd be wonderful, Francesca. May I bring the rest of the gang along?"
"No, Jack, I think it'd be more romantic if it was just the two of us. Don't you agree?"
Professor Jones laughed heartily and said, "Well, Jack, I don't think Eliza would be too thrilled to hear about you going off on a date with a beautiful Italian television reporter."
"It's not a date. She's just showing me the turn,"
insisted Jack. "But I do admit she's drop-dead gorgeous." After a wonderful day touring the city and seeing all the sights, Francesca invited Jack back to her apartment. The first thing to greet Jack was her poodle dog. It barked furiously and obviously didn't like the idea of a swan coming into his apartment.
Francesca picked up the dog and kissed it all over its snout. The oochie-coochie-coo noises she made had Jack's eyes rolled to the top of his head. Jack did agree to a small glass of white wine and sat uncomfortably as the poodle continued to growl in a low and menacing manner.
Oh, don't let Bobo worry you. I'm sure the two of you will get along wonderfully. I adore Bobo just as I adore you, Jack.
It was becoming clear to Jack that Francesca regarded him not as some feathered individual that could discuss art and cooking, but rather he was just another household pet. Jack finished his wine and made his excuses and waddled off back to the hotel. He enjoyed Francesca's company. She was beautiful beyond words, but he was never going to be anybody's pet swan, ever. Monday morning arrived in Pisa. There was a slight, refreshing chill in the air. The piazza in front of the tower was abuzz with workers preparing the big forklift. Television crews from around the world had set up small tents, and reporters were busily sending out their first news reports of the day. Dio te salvi Bonanno Pisano, the great mechanical forklift, was ready to regain the honor and dignity of the Italian people. Roman architecture was legendary. The Roman roads were nitpicking straight, and aqueducts such as the almost 2,000-year-old Pont du Gard in France were still standing and functioning. Today would be a day of national pride with the famous bent Tower of Pisa restored to an upright position. Mr. Moggs and Professor Jones' frustration with their Italian colleagues rose like a pizza pie crust in a hot oven. There was an enormous amount of shouting and arm-waving and little of anything else. "Why can't we just get started?" said Moggs as his frustration and anger started to build. "Be patient, my friend. That's the Latin way of doing things," answered Professor Jones. Somewhere around 10:30 in the morning, 2 hours late, the great machine roared into life, and to thunderous applause, they nudged the Tower of Pisa slowly and carefully into an upright position. At 3:30 in the afternoon, the tower's straightening miracle came to completion. And if it hadn't been for a two-hour lunch break and a late pizza delivery, work might have ended sooner. This infuriated the already infuriated Moggs even more. With the tower in an upright position, Francesca invited Jack to have his picture taken in the usual tourist pose, pretending to either hold up the tower or push it over.
"Jack, bellissimo, you'll be the first person, or swan, in the world to have your tourist picture taken holding up the vertical Tower of Pisa."
She escorted Jack to a position down the manicured lawns of Piazza del Duomo. At this point, you could cheat a camera focal length in such a way to make it appear as if a person was standing right next to the tower. Tourists discovered this photographic trick many years ago, and every visitor to Pisa seems almost obliged to have his or her picture taken this way. Jack happily obliged, and the picture made it into the newspapers around the world. The sounds of celebration went on into the evening and the night. Everyone was jubilant, as the operation had gone off without a hitch. Everyone that was, except Professor Jones and Mr. Moggs. They were down in the basement of the tower, inspecting the newly poured concrete foundations.
"Listen," said Professor Jones. "I told the workers to remove the foundation stone that contains the neodymium and replace it with a concrete block, but it's still here."
Professor Jones ran his magnetometer over the stone to confirm the rare earth was still there.
"Wait a minute, wait a cotton-picking minute. There's some writing on the stone, or at least there was some writing. Someone has chiseled it off."
A closer examination using the video screen and the magnetometer did indeed show a clear trace of neatly carved script.
"What does it say?" asked Moggs.
Professor Jones squinted and asked Emma to fetch his Latin phrasebook. After a few minutes of feverish translation, the English version read,
August the 9th, in the year of our Lord, 1173, I, Dio Ti Savi, laid this foundation stone with the help of the sculptor, Bonanno Pisano.
Well, why did someone erase the names? Asked Emma.
Moggs rubbed his head thoughtfully and then said, Obvious, my dear friends, when the tower started to lean, there was a great shame felt by these two men, and possibly they snuck down here one dark night and erased their names and their shame from this foundation stone.
Well, there's nothing more we can do tonight, said Moggs. Might as well join the celebration upstairs and think on earth we can get the Neodymium out of this stone.
Why is it so important? Asked Emma.
Because I believe contained in that rare earth are the energy fields from some of the greatest events in history. They believe Galileo dropped two cannonballs from the tower in an experiment. With the Neodymium as a conduit, we can travel back in time and answer some of the greatest mysteries of all time. The sight that greeted the three in the piazza was a welcome relief. The organizers erected a mobile karaoke stage. And who do you think was on stage entertaining the jubilant crowd? Jack, the opera-singing swan.
Non ti scordar di me.
True, he was not a tenor in the great traditions of Italian opera, but if they lowered the pitch of the karaoke songs just two semitones to the baritone range, then Jack's long neck and deep vibrato voice could have brought a tear even to the eyes of the late, great Luciano Pavarotti. Jack discovered that he could download songs over the internet. This was driving Eliza mad. Eliza could just handle a flying Chinese food delivery swan, but a flying Italian opera singing swan, almost too much to bear. Back at the hotel, the four discussed the situation with the foundation stone. They decided that early next morning they would go back into the basement of the tower and see if it was possible to chip away enough of the foundation stone to release the Neodymium. Jack was just on his way to his hotel room when Francesco walked up to him.
Jack, bellissimo, I can't stop thinking about you. I'm sorry about the other night. I am not looking for another cuddly pet. You have become more than that to me. Tonight, for example, when you sang Non ti scordar di me, I broke down and cried.
Jack could see the tears welling in Francesca's eyes.
Soon you'll be returning to England, and I may never see you again. Jack, I love you.
With that, Francesca ran off into the night, sobbing. The hotel lobby was empty, and Jack sank down in the comfort of a large cushioned chair. Well, Jack, my lad, he thought, you've done it again. Something new to add to your list of things you've broken. Now it includes the heart of a beautiful young woman. Unintended consequences mean that despite your best efforts and intentions, things just go wrong. Next morning at the local politician's office, there was a crowd of very angry people. The first person to confront the mayor and the government officials was the manager of the Doña Berta Bernardo Hotel. He angrily waved an email in front of the mayor's face.
See this? I have 600 Japanese tourists cancel on me. They say they wanted to see the Leaning Tower of Pisa, not an upright one. Every hour I get more cancellations. If this continues, ruination, disgrace, bankruptcy, and I could go broke.
The manager of the local supermarket was the next angry complainant. He had a similar story because he supplied food to all the restaurants, bars, and hotels. His sales were suddenly down by more than 80%. The stream of restaurant owners, bar owners, all came with the same sad tale of woe. The final angry complainant was the one they least expected, the priest from the local church. Father Vincenzo Apoplexy sat down in front of the mayor
and with his head in his hands said, "Nobody comes to church anymore, and if the tourists don't drop money into the offering boxes, how will I survive? I'm a priest. I'll be out of work. I'm too old to find a new job."
The manager of the Barnardo Hotel summed up everyone's feelings when he threatened that at the upcoming civil election, the people would throw the mayor and the local politicians into the street. People need not have worried, because help was on its way. In another unintended consequence, a blue-eyed English swan was going to save the day for the people of Pisa. Jack, Mr. Moggs, Emma, and the professor had gone out into the basement of the Pisa Tower to see if by some means they could extract the neodymium from the foundation stone. Mr. Moggs poked at the rock with a small hammer, but the stone barely gave up a few sprinkles of dust. That's when Jack spotted a worker's pickaxe. Now, swans have extremely strong wings. They say they can break a man's arm or leg. Jack told everyone to stand clear, and knowing Jack, that's exactly what everyone did. Jack took one almighty swing of the axe and completely missed. His next attempt, with his eyes open, was much better. This time he struck the stone with a resounding... Immediately the stone cracked along its length. A chunk fell onto the floor, revealing a large ball of neodymium. Professor Jones grabbed the metal ball and excitedly ran up the basement steps. You would think the unintended consequences would have stopped by now. No. The crack in the foundation stone didn't stop there. It slowly and noisily started spreading all along the old foundation blocks. Imminent collapse seemed inevitable. So Moggs, Emma, and Jack quickly ran up the basement steps and out onto the grass of the piazza. People saw the tower shuddering and small pieces of rock were cascading down from the upper floors. The horrified onlookers looked at Jack, who was still holding the pickaxe, and put two and two together. Then the tower started to lean over. The screams of "it's going to collapse, it's going to collapse" caused panic and a wild stampede. The fall of the 183-foot-tall and 14,500-metric-ton structure would have been a disaster. Jack swallowed hard and thought, "Wonderful, wonderful, Jack Swan, you've just destroyed another great architectural monument." This, however, was the day of many unintended consequences. The old foundation stones did indeed crumble, but the newly poured reinforced concrete did slow the lean of the tower. An anxious and nail-biting hour later, the tower stopped moving. A quick assessment showed the leaning had stopped at an angle of 3.97 degrees to the southwest, exactly the same angle that it had before. The dramatic worldwide television pictures brought sighs of relief, and people were thankful there were no reports of injuries. The publicity also had another unintended consequence. The tourists immediately started to book their returns. The mayor estimated that 2012 would see the tourist visits rise by more than 80%. After the incident, Jack threw away the pickaxe and tried to skulk away where no one would see him, but a mob of local Italians seized him. Spaghetti Suonadoro or lasagna a la Jack would have been completely in order, but wait, they didn't want him as an ingredient. They were smiling and cheerful. "This is weird," thought Jack. Still, they are Italians. Instead, the crowd hoisted him triumphantly on their shoulders. "Viva, viva Jack Signo! He has saved our famous tower." That night in the Piazza del Duomo, they honored Jack as the savior of the tower and, more importantly, savior of the local economy. The people insisted that before he left, he had to sing his best operatic aria one more time. As Jack belted out the song "Non ti scordar di me," the packed piazza swayed to the rhythm of the song. Francesca Bobolini
was waiting for Jack as he left the stage. "Jack, do you know what the title of that song means?"
"Haven't a clue, Francesca."
"It means, do not forget me. I will never forget you, Jack Swan."
Jack wondered how he could erase all the lipstick that Francesca had plastered all over his head and beak. He knew Eliza would never understand. Then he held Francesca with the tips of his wings, and as the tears filled his big blue eyes, he gazed into hers and softly said,
"The song is my promise, Francesca. I will never forget you."